From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is Cool Science Radio.
Science and technology that's accessible and entertaining.
If we can understand it, you can understand it.
I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm John Wells. Tim Harford, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. I think all science is cool, so it's great to be on the Cool Science Radio channel.
Oh, well, we are delighted to have you with us. I'll start with just a quick confession. I love numbers, and yet I'm totally wiped out this year. You know, we've got COVID statistics, mask statistics. If I drink bleach, should I drink it from a shot glass, or is it better just to take it all down in an 8-ounce glass? We just went through this election process. Statistics, I am overwhelmed.
Yeah, it is overwhelming. They're all around us. And of course, not all of them are presented with our best interests at heart. But I'm really trying to get people not to lose faith in statistics, because from my point of view, they're like radar or like an MRI scanner for someone who's sick, or like a telescope for an astronomer. They're a way of seeing things that we couldn't possibly see in any other way. And if we take them for granted, or if we're dismissive of them, we get jaded, then we're turning our back on a really vital tool.
And what I like about your book is that there are many people that are challenged by math, challenged by statistics, but you're basically telling us it's about the questions that we ask. And you don't have to be a mathematical person to ask the right questions about a sample size or if the axis is right and all those sorts of things. So that's what I appreciated about your book.
Well, thank you. And you're absolutely right. There's not actually a lot of math in the book, because you can be the world's greatest expert, technical expert, and you can still fool yourself.
Yeah.
If you want to fool yourself. And you can ask some pretty basic questions and immediately gain a lot of insight into what's going on. Sometimes I advocate to people to remember the three C's. So the three C's are calm, context, curiosity. So calm is just when you see a number, when you see a statistical claim, very often the first thing that will happen is you'll have an emotional reaction. You'll feel, yeah, this proves I was right. Or you'll be angry. Or you'll think, oh, that can't be true. That's fake news. And that's because a lot of media is designed to excite an emotional reaction, because that's what gets the subscribers, that's what gets the clicks. But if you notice that reaction, take a deep breath, and then go back to the claim, you're already thinking more clearly. And the second C, context, is just to say, well, what if I compare this number to other numbers? Is it big or is it small? Is it going up or is it going down? Where did it come from anyway? These are pretty simple questions, but the finding the answers illuminates a lot. And if you're looking at a source that doesn't tell you the answers, well, I think that's quite telling as well. And then the final thing, maybe this is the most important for science is cool, right? We think science is cool. Curiosity. Yeah. Curiosity is so important. Just the frame of mind that a statistic is a window onto the world, that is going to make us smarter, is going to show us something that we might not otherwise know, rather than a statistic is just a bit of ammunition in a politician's speech, or it's a way to win an argument on Twitter. If you have that more curious, open-minded, exploratory frame of mind, I think you're in a much better situation to make sense of the numbers.
And Tim, if you go into something with an opinion, and you start looking at some statistics, how do you guard against confirmation bias? How do you take the emotion out of that analysis?
I don't think it's a straightforward thing. I mean, confirmation bias is very powerful. The joke is, hey, since I found out about confirmation bias, now I see it everywhere I look. and it's true. Ronald Fisher, one of the greatest statisticians of the 20th century, really laid the statistical apparatus that is still used today. Ronald Fisher was convinced that there was just no good evidence that smoking cigarettes gave you cancer. And he had all kinds of clever technical arguments, but I think what was really going on is that Fisher really liked his cigarettes. He really liked to smoke, and he didn't want to believe it was killing him.
Oh boy.
So, you know, I don't think there's a silver bullet. There's no magic kind of incantation that you can chant that will make confirmation bias go away. But just that first step that I said of noticing your emotional reaction, that is going to help. It's going to help.
Yeah, and that may have helped Bredius when he was taking a look at what he thought was a Vermeer painting that is in the very beginning of your book. He got very emotional about it. He was sort of blown away, and that completely clouded his vision. And this is a person who had done such an incredible job of sussing out fakes from real works.
Yeah. I mean, Abraham Bredius was a great art critic, one of the world's leading scholars, and he was fooled by what was actually a pretty crude forgery. It doesn't look like a Vermeer. I could show you it and you'd say, oh, show you a real Vermeer, show you the forgery. You'd say, why? Why would anybody be fooled? Mm-hmm. And particularly, why would someone like Abraham Bredius, this great art critic, be fooled? But it was, as you say, all about the emotion. In fact, he said, when I saw this work, I had difficulty controlling my emotion.
Yes.
Because in all kinds of clever ways, the forger had painted this picture to speak to Abraham Bredius's confirmation bias. It showed him all sorts of little clues that said it was real. And of course, he missed the one big clue that it wasn't real, which is that it didn't look like a Vermeer, which you would think was the most important thing, but it turns out not. And the reason I start a book about statistics with a story about an art forgery where there were no numbers at all is because I think that the psychology of this is so important, that nobody knew more about Vermeer than this critic, Abraham Bredius, and he fooled himself. So it doesn't matter how much I tell you about statistics, you will still fool yourself if you want to. And if you don't want to, and if you're trying to see the truth, then it doesn't take that much technical expertise to get a very long way.
Exactly. Yeah. Hey, if you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, first of all, thanks for joining us. But we are speaking with Tim Harford. He is a best-selling author of The Undercover Economist. He's also has several TED Talks you've got to check out. And we're talking to him today about his latest book just released, The Data Detective, 10 Easy Rules to Make Sense of Statistics. You mentioned something in the book I got a kick out of, which is you talk about Daryl Huff's book, How to Live with Statistics, saying that it's probably one of the most popular books about statistics ever written. And I'm curious, is that because people buying this book and reading the book, because they don't want to be duped, or people that want to figure out how to dupe others?
Well, yeah, I did once hear a story on NPR's Planet Money about how somebody had used Daryl Huff's How to Lie with Statistics as a bit of a manual for how to lie with statistics. I mean, it's not initially supposed to be that. It's supposed to be a warning. Huff says, "Oh, the crooks already know these tricks. You know, honest people must teach themselves in self-defense." But actually, I have very mixed feelings about that book. It's a great book, great cartoons. It's funny. It's insightful. It's really full of important ideas about how statistics can fool us. But fundamentally, it leads us into this potentially quite toxic position, which is whenever you see a statistic, to immediately go, well, it's obviously not true. I just need to figure out how it's a lie. So Daryl Huff made everything like a stage magician's trick. Like, you know, everything the stage magician does is a trick. You know, the rabbit didn't really appear from midair, but a lot of statistics aren't tricks. They're real, and they're showing us something really important about the world. And in the book, I point out the irony that Huff's book was published the same year that some of the first really compelling evidence was produced that smoking cigarettes will give you cancer. And it was collected through statistics. So you've got this guy saying, oh, it's just a joke. Don't take it seriously. Don't be fooled. And then you've got two British epidemiologists who are saving literally hundreds of millions of lives.
Yes.
with their discovery. Mm-hmm. And the sad ending to that story is that Daryl Huff, the author of How to Lie with Statistics, ended up working for the tobacco lobby. He worked on a sequel called How to Lie with Smoking Statistics, and he testified in Congress that Congress shouldn't put health warnings on packets of cigarettes. And he told these funny stories about storks and babies, and it was all great, except people were dying because of this disinformation.
And 10 or 15 years ago at Harvard University, there was a study that showed when actual facts were presented counter to a person's belief system, that they would dig their heels in and feel their beliefs were even more correct. They felt even stronger about that. So, and this is complex, of course, but how do we get around this?
Yeah, so there's this thing called the backfire effect, which it's not clear exactly how powerful it is and exactly when it really operates. But we do know, I think, that facts are not the key thing that influences our views. We're influenced by what our friends think. We're influenced by what we want to believe. We're influenced by our emotional reaction. And, you know, I don't want to be nihilistic. We're influenced by the facts as well. They're all kind of there in the mix. So, you know, as I say, that opening up with calm and just noticing, am I digging my heels in? Am I feeling resistance? Am I angry? Am I in denial?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's an important starting point. And then really opening up that the third C of curiosity, asking questions, asking, well, what questions does this claim bring up? What do I want to understand about how they discovered this? Being more open-minded, being more curious, I think is a much better frame of mind for trying to sort of understand the world. What I sometimes say is, if you're getting into an argument with people, and my book's not about how to convince other people, right? I think I have enough trouble convincing myself, right? So trying to keep my own thinking straight. But if I'm in an argument with somebody else, I will ask them not to justify their opinion, but just to explain. So what evidence do you have for that view? Why did you come to that conclusion? You're in favor of this policy. Just explain how that policy would actually work. And very often when people are challenged to do that, they realize they don't know as much as they thought.
Right.
And people will sometimes talk themselves out of silly views, because given enough room to explain their silly view, they realize the view's silly. But maybe the view's not silly. Maybe they actually understand things that you haven't appreciated. Well, either way, you can't lose. Like, either they're going to get smarter or you're going to get smarter. And either way, you're going to have a better conversation. And you may end up persuading somebody by accident, but it's very difficult to persuade somebody if that's what you set out to do and they think that's what you're trying to do. People don't like to be pushed around intellectually.
It sure works better when you find common ground with people, when you can agree on some things and then take a look at something. I wanted to ask you, your book is so well researched. What surprised you most about statistics as you researched this book?
I think the story that surprised me most was really digging deep into Florence Nightingale, and just what a remarkable, she's famous for being a nurse in the mid 1800s, but actually she launched a public health revolution armed with an incredibly compelling set of what are basically pie charts. And the more I found out about the odds she was facing, the powerful forces ranged against her, and also how very clever and groundbreaking her data visualization was. I mean, that's a story that's really stuck in my mind. But I think that the fact about pure statistics that surprised me the most was just how powerful curiosity can be. Oh. When you look at the data on polarization, political tribalism, it's very disheartening, because it seems like almost nothing makes it better. You can give people numeracy skills, it doesn't help. You can give people scientific education, it doesn't help. When people are more curious, that really does make a difference. And that was a surprise to me, but it it suggests there's something going on in the curious-minded person of wanting to understand the world rather than wanting to win an argument that just flips you into a different and more productive state of mind.
For years, ever since we learned how to communicate, we've been telling ourselves certain stories about our that became that formed our beliefs and our fears and our aspirations and those sorts of things. And it's part of our humanness. Has technology accelerated that and taken it in a new direction?
I think technology has done a few things. Some of them are very positive and some of them are very negative. So the negatives, the technology really selects for emotion. The algorithms that are showing us information are really feeding off our emotional reactions. That's what gets the retweets. That's not helpful. They strip facts of context. You see something, you see, often it's because somebody who disagrees with a tweet has retweeted it, and then they get thousands of retweets, and you don't understand what it was that this person was originally trying to say. So you've lost all context. That's not helpful. And also, we're very distracted and we're in a hurry. We're not willing to slow down and really take the time to understand. So that's all negative. But there are really positive things as well. So even on Twitter, as a nerd, I follow epidemiology Twitter now. There are really smart, well-read epidemiologists who are in real time explaining the latest research as it comes out, digging deep, and they're discussing with each other, and you can see the disagreements, and you learn so much. That's a tremendous privilege. I mean, that would have been unimaginable 40 years ago. And similarly, any serious newspaper will link to its sources. You can go and read the original research. Any interesting scientific claim, there'll be blog posts. You can go and see the experts discussing it. So for me, it's all a question of whether we want to understand. Social media pushes us towards fast trigger gut reactions and shouting. But the internet also puts this amazing resource at our fingers. And if we want to understand what's going on, if we're curious and we're willing to go one more click, then the world can really make sense.
My co-host and I started Cool Science Radio 8 years ago because we thought that science was getting a bit of a black eye, and we wanted to shine a light on these extraordinary women and men in science and technology and what they were doing. Why did you write this book on statistics?
I've been presenting a radio program about statistics for nearly 15 years called More or Less. And I've always loved doing it, and I've always loved getting geeky. But over the last few years, you know, I got a few bruises, so to speak. And the bruises were really the realization that in certain, often very political arguments, nobody seemed to care about the facts. And what were we doing fact-checking when the most flagrant and obvious lies could be told and there'd be no consequence? And that's the point at which I thought, you know, that I do have a book to write. Because people had been saying for years, oh, we should write a book about statistics. And I was like, no, there are loads of great books about statistics. I don't have anything to add. But I realized the last few years I do have something to add. And there are two things. One is to help people understand these emotional and political reactions that they're having, as well as just the data, which is important. Because our filters and biases are so significant in a determinant of what we believe. And the second thing I really wanted to do was just to remind people that statistics really are an amazing tool. There's this old story about Galileo's telescope. The story goes, and it's kind of exaggerated over the centuries, but the story goes that Galileo was being persecuted by the Catholic Church. And he asked the cardinals, look through this telescope. You'll see what I see. You'll see the moons of Jupiter, and the cardinals wouldn't look. So that's the story. And we tell that story today and we feel very smug and we think, well, we're much more rational these days. Well, for me, statistics are like a telescope. And I see that behavior all the time around me every day. I see people who won't look through the telescope of statistics because they're afraid, just as the cardinals were supposedly afraid. They're afraid of being tricked. And instead, what we do is we pick up the telescope and we smash each other around the head with it, because that we feel we understand. And that's really what I wanted to try to persuade people to rethink, in my book.
I like that story. I also believe that, you know, Galileo, he took the spyglass that was already invented somewhere and he modified it. And he was the first one to look up into the sky. And it was a pretty crude lens. And I still can't figure out how he saw those moons in Jupiter. It wasn't. I mean, when you look at Hubble today, I mean, we are so spoiled with Hubble. Hubble's done more to advance science education than anything. And boy, what Galileo was working with was pretty crude, but it was pretty cool.
You know, it really was. And I feel the same way about statistics, because we've got so much data now available. It's incredible. We've come so far. We're able to do, in my country alone, hundreds of thousands of COVID tests every day. And then the results of those COVID tests go up on a website every day. And every day you can, as an ordinary citizen, you can see, right, how many tests have been done, how many were positive, how many people have been taken to hospital, how many people have died, how many vaccinations have been done. It's all just up there. Even a few years ago, it would have been hard to imagine that kind of data. And yet we're still talking about, oh, there's fake news. Oh, we've had enough of experts. We've got this amazing resource to help us understand what's going on, and we really shouldn't take it for granted. It's a privilege to be able to see as much of the world as we can see, and a life-saving privilege as well. Good data save lives. And I'm just trying to get people to not take that for granted and to use the data to show the world more clearly.
Absolutely. And it's the same thing with climate. NASA and NOAA every year come up with a number of how the Earth's doing as far as the temperature. And they have a constellation of satellites. They have thousands of buoys and they have 28,000 weather stations and all sorts of people they talk to. But all of this data is available publicly. You can interrogate the data of any buoy in the world that NOAA has responsibility for. And you can also get the satellite feeds and do your own math if you want to. So it's pretty interesting.
It's amazing. And yet somehow people's interpretation of that data is almost entirely governed by their politics, which is, I think, is a reminder of one of the underlying points I'm making in the book, which is that there's amazing information out there, but we can use it or we can lie to ourselves. And it's really our choice.
Right. Again, Tim Harford has written The Data Detective, 10 Easy Rules to Make Sense of Statistics. We'd love to talk to you again, and we hope you'll come back on Cool Science Radio. Thanks for joining us.
I'd love to. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Cool Science Radio.
If you enjoyed this episode, please rate us, give us a 5, and leave us a comment.
Take us along on your next adventure to the moon.
If you have any story ideas, please let us know at coolscienceradio@kpcw.org.
Thanks for listening, and hey, tune in next week.